Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom. And we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. Coming back with our last review for free month into the Optimal Body membership. Thank you guys so much for these incredible reviews. Don't forget that you can still leave reviews. This is just the last opportunity to get into the Optimal Body for free for your first month. But if we continue to read your reviews, we know what you want to know more of. So please go rate, review, leave us a lovely review letting us know what you want to learn more of in the PT Pearls or who you're willing to have on as a guest. So this one is exceptional from BeachGirl929. So please, BeachGirl929, reach out to us at jen@docjenfit.com because you get access into a free month of the Optimal Body membership. I'm going to condense this a little bit, but it says this is an excellent podcast. Jen and Dom are able to distill information down so that anyone can understand what they're talking about. Every episode had tons as useful tips, and I appreciate the people they have interviewed. I really love the two episodes on knees. And then she goes in to talk about her own experience with knees, what she's learned about it. So thank you. I also can't forget about their emphasis on mind-body connection. As I am more on the flexible side, I would love to hear an episode on hypermobility and how to deal with that. Thank you both for your amazing insights, and it's deeply appreciated. Yes, BeachGirl929, we will get on hypermobility. This is a big one for a lot of people, so thank you so much for the review. Again, please go rate, subscribe, review, pass it on to friends so that we continue to learn how we can serve you. Welcome back to another PT Pearl. This one we're going to talk about bloating. Well, actually, we're going to talk about gut mobility and motility and different things and techniques mechanically that you can do physically with your body to actually help reduce bloat.
Yeah, we talk a lot about mobility of the body and the joints and the muscles, but something that's just as important to the mobility and health overall of our bodies is our organs in our abdomen and how those things are moving. And we will develop a lot of pain throughout life based on how our stomach's feeling or based on the different pains we get in our abdomen. So we're going to touch a little bit into those kinds of things today.
Yes. And I'm excited because this is only going to help confirm even more how the body is all connected. We talk about this all the time. Everyone's heard it. But like now we're going to actually dive in a little bit deeper, literally deeper, into how your organs are connected and the motility of your intestines and how that relates to the mobility and the access and the health of our entire bodies.
So you keep using this word motility. I think we should explain a little bit of what that means. It's just this interesting word that means, you know, the movement of things through our organs, or, you know, we might be talking about our intestinal motility. So we've got these big intestines, our small intestine, which is really just throughout the bulk of our abdomen because it's so big. And that's what all the food starts to get processed through. And then it goes into our large intestine, which kind of wraps up along the outside of the right of our body, across the top, like right underneath what kind of where our ribs are. And then down the left side of the body, and motility meaning the movement of all that stuff through those intestines, through the stomach, and out of us.
Yes. And I know we're going to talk about our own journeys and how we've used some of the techniques that we'll be able to give you guys in terms of how it's impacted our life and our clients and what we do today and what we know now, which is really cool. And I'll just dive into a quick little story on my back end because we just talked about the colon.
Yep.
And
colon being another name for that large intestine.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. I guess I didn't clarify that part.
Well, you know.
So I have actually had a twisted colon in three different places. Crazy.
What?
So when I was in grad school, actually. I think it was my second year of grad school. And I was getting really bad bouts of stomach pain to the point where I could not eat for like a week. I could barely stand. I was like crippled in pain. I could barely sit in class. I could barely go to work at the time. I was teaching Pilates, and it was just so hard to even sit there and have to teach and have to think, because it really is true. Like your gut and your intestines is your second brain. And when this isn't working well, nothing is working well. And that's how I'd feel. And it got to the point where I went to the hospital 3 times and needed morphine to actually make me feel better.
That's some strong stuff.
Yeah. The first time they thought I had appendicitis because my white blood cells had gone up to really try to protect me because something in my body didn't feel right. So because I had this immune response, they thought, oh, something was happening with my appendix. In the morning, turns out it wasn't.
Yeah.
And then I had a doctor tell me, he talked to me for literally 2 minutes. The nurse came in the next day and said, here's a pamphlet. He said not to eat dairy. And I'm like, first, he didn't even talk to me and ask me if I had eaten dairy and if that's a part of my diet. And it was just like all this, it felt very like, you don't care about me. You haven't even talked to me.
Yeah.
And then the second time it happened, the doctor was actually really incredible in the ER. He spent 30 minutes after he got off his shift just to continue to talk to me about what's going on in life. Am I stressed? And I'm like, yeah, I'm a grad student, but honestly, I don't feel that stressed. I'm competing in calisthenics and I have a fun job and I have all this. And I was finally diagnosed with IBS, so irritable bowel syndrome. Mm. Thank you for telling my symptoms. And he really just told me he actually prescribed anti-anxiety medication, which I never ended up taking because, again, I did not feel like I was having a lot of anxiety. And then the third time it happened, my dad was finally like, you're getting the colonoscopy just so that we can see. Again, going through PT school and pathology, I knew that there were a lot of symptoms that I was not experiencing that would have related to Crohn's or colitis or any of these other things. That's why I resisted having a colonoscopy. Anyways, had the colonoscopy. Turns out that untwisted my colon. It ended up being a super painful experience as the doctor was going up. And doing the colonoscopy, I was only partially knocked out. And I remember crying. I remember trying to push the nurse's hand away from my belly. Every time they had to go up through a twist, the nurse had to push onto my stomach. I remember it just being a pretty awful experience. At the end of the day, after it was done, he was like, we untwisted it. You're good. But couldn't tell me why it got twisted, what I could have done for it, and how I can prepare in the future. And that's really what drove me down understanding health and how foods relate to the body. But now I wish I had this understanding that we're going to talk about today in terms of how you can mechanically support the pain that you have in your stomach as well.
Yeah, because this was before I even knew you, and you're just telling me about this. And now the way that you practice and make sure that you keep your organs and your abdominal organs moving, especially your intestines, is just a little stimulus that you kind of keep putting in to teach those organs and to teach that intestine, that colon, like, hey, it's okay for us to keep moving. Hey, some things might come up that irritate us. However, it is good for us to keep moving, and that can help us maybe release some of this tension or release some of these symptoms that may come up. So I've noticed sometimes that when you get stomach symptoms coming up, like, you'll even have a little bit of that, ooh, like, I don't want my colon to get twisted again.
Mm-hmm.
Because you never really knew exactly what caused it, right? And so I think that some of the practices that we go through today are going to help any of the listeners or people watching just explore that a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I guess, should I talk a little bit about,
Sure. You
know, I've mentioned, maybe if you've listened to some of the previous PT pros, that I had an inguinal hernia, which is kind of just down near the groin. I had a pulling apart of some of the fascial layers that kind of hold our intestines in and hold our abdominal organs in. And to the point where when I would cough or when I would talk really loud or bear down at all, I had a little bit of a protrusion or something kind of poking out the bottom of my abdomen. And I was a junior in high school the first time that happened. And so I went in, had him look at it. Well, my dad is the family physician, so he's like, yep, you've got a hernia. And so they did a surgery to patch it up, right, and put a mesh in there. And so they put this mesh into my inguinal area. Great, it's fixed, right? Or so you think, because a few years later, I'm having a lot of low abdominal pain again and a lot of that pelvic kind of area pain that I was experiencing when I had this hernia in the first place. And I'm like, Dad, it's happening again. Like, I'm having this thing again. And then, so they ended up going in after I complained about it enough to have another exploratory surgery. And they're like, nope, the mesh is still in place. Like, you're fine. You're good. And again, that's where it's like, well, why am I still having all this pain? And now after I've gone through PT school and I've done a lot of work in my abdomen and how I breathe and in how I support my abdomen, I'm just realizing that I never fixed anything. We put a mesh in there that then kind of adhered down to some of those layers of fascia that when I would do high-level athletics, like I was still playing football in college, I was still lifting weights, I was still putting a lot of pressure into my abdomen, and those organs were still wanting to push out the front even with that mesh there. So that's why I was still experiencing a lot of those symptoms. And I still, to this day, when I do certain, you know, abdominal exercises or core exercises, feel different pulls and tugs down there. But again, as long as I know I'm supporting, as long as I know I'm breathing well and doing some of the visceral mobilization stuff that we're going to kind of touch into, it's just me exploring how to re-educate my abdomen as to how to support in that area now.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's so incredibly important to understand, like, especially you going through surgery, me going through colonoscopy, this is a pretty popular thing that doesn't get talked about hardly ever. We don't talk about the intestines a lot. We don't talk about the motility and the things and the mechanical tools that you can use. We usually talk about, well, what's the fix? What's the peel? What's the pill that I'm going to take in order to help me relieve and feel better? When really, there's so much that we can do to help support it. And I just want to touch on real quick, because you mentioned like the fascia in the area.
Yes.
And in case you didn't remember, we've talked about fascia before, but it's your connective tissue. So think of it like that connective layer. And usually when people think about fascia, we're thinking about the connective tissue that overlays your muscles. Well, fascia actually goes all the way through the body. It's highly, I mean, kind of like you can think of it as different layers, but it's just what it's what, literally what connects our entire body and why our organs are connected to all the way up through our skin. So right underneath our skin, we have superficial fascial layer. Then we have, layers of fascia underneath that, and then layers of fascia on the muscle tissue, and then layers of fascia into the organs and that wrap around the organs. And what this means is that we're going to have fluids all throughout these areas as well, and all throughout the fascia. And when the fluids that support and wrap around and interweave through the fascia are not moving well, we slow down the process and the ability to move through the intestines, the muscles, and the tissue all throughout our entire body.
In the same way as if you have a real tight calf or a real tight quad, and that can impact your back or your shoulder. When I had my issues with my hernia and had really tight fascial layers kind of in that low abdomen, that impacted the way my back felt. That impacted the way my upper back and neck felt. And I really didn't start to realize that until I became aware of it and started tapping into it a little bit. So just knowing that everyone's insides look a little bit different.
Yeah.
We're not symmetrical on the insides. We have this big liver that sits right underneath the right side of our rib cage that's like football shaped and football sized. We have our stomach and our spleen and our... what else do we have
pancreas.
On the left side? Pancreas on the left side, and kidneys on each side that are a little lower. So on our insides, we aren't symmetrical. So we need to be able to make sure that all of these organs have that mobility, know how to move about the space that they occupy, and allow some of that fluid to move through these layers and get to the organs and make sure that they're functioning okay.
Yeah. So we've talked about breath before. And if you missed that PT Pearl, I would highly, highly recommend scrolling back and listening to that or watching it on YouTube, because on YouTube, we give a lot of techniques as well in terms of how to start to open up that breath pattern and really what we're talking about. So we'll just quick little review. Right underneath your rib cage lies your diaphragm. And this is what everyone talks about, diaphragmatic breathing. Well, we're always diaphragmatic breathing because we're always using our rib cage. It's our respiratory muscle. But it's just, are we giving it the adequate space and the ability to really become efficient? And that's what most people are meaning when they talk about diaphragmatic breathing. So if you think about it, right underneath that rib cage, as we take a breath in, that diaphragm is going to drop, and it's actually going to push into all our organs and our intestines. And it
Which is why when you're having stomach pain sometimes...
Well, I'm going to get to that.
I was going to say, you're probably going to touch on this. Okay, keep going.
So the diaphragm, it drops as we breathe in, and it has to drop in order for our lungs to fill up, right?
Yeah.
And then as we breathe out, that diaphragm naturally will lift and contract, and so that it pushes the air out. But what happens a lot when we get into that stomach pain, we don't want to take that deep inhale, because as that diaphragm pushes down, we already feel like I have pain in the stomach. I don't want anything to push into me more, right? Like, I know for myself, when I usually get stomach pain, I don't want tight clothing on. I actually, I want like nothing on. I want to relax my stomach. I don't want anything touching me, and it's painful. So to think of me, okay, let me push my diaphragm into my intestines even more, it this fear response. And when we don't do that though, and we keep it contracted and we only breathe into our chest, all we're doing is continuing to hold on to that contraction, and it repeats this pattern of holding on to the pain in our stomach.
Yeah, so along with our diaphragm, there's a big muscle that kind of wraps around our whole body, that kind of around the whole side supports those organs from, you know, pushing out into our belly. That's called our transverse abdominis, which is this big abdominal muscle that kind of works with the diaphragm as we breathe in and breathe out. There's some give and take of that transverse abdominis. So these, all of these core muscles, along with our pelvic floor, are kind of the things that help pump that abdomen. And when we pump that abdomen, we allow those organs to feel like they can move a little bit and feel comfortable with that movement. And it's just naturally how our breath should pump the fluids into in our abdomen and get things moving, and also have some mobility of those organs within the space that they occupy.
Mm-hmm. And when we're able to really get that breath going, not only do we reduce the restriction that's happening in the stomach and the pain, but think about it this way. Like when we talk about these, that autonomic nervous system, you've probably heard or heard us talk about the parasympathetic and the sympathetic.
Yeah.
The parasympathetic is the rest, relax, digest state of being. Your sympathetic is your fight, flight, freeze. So especially when you get stomach pain, any pain, but especially stomach pain, what you want to do, you want to constrict into a ball, you want to hold yourself, you don't want to breathe big. And again, we end up holding on to that restriction, holding on to that pain in the stomach area. But if I then tap into that parasympathetic, that rest, relax, digest state, that's actually going to help to relieve the tension. So that's why it's important to take those nice, slow, long inhales, slow, long exhales, and tap more into that parasympathetic so that we can get things moving and actually digest and process the food through our bellies.
Yeah, so the breath work does so many amazing things in how it supports and organizes those organs mechanically, or how they're moving physically, and how we influence the nervous system to make the nerves in the stomach feel like, oh, we can give a little more. Oh, it is comfortable or good for us to explore into that discomfort a little bit. Same as when we have a sore muscle. Sometimes stretching it is a little bit uncomfortable, but when we breathe into it and explore into that movement, it actually helps relieve the pain. So I think, should we show them a little technique on that we like to use when we're having bloating or feeling a little bit of abdominal pain?
Yeah.
So if you're listening, you're going to maybe want to pop over to YouTube to actually watch us do this. But this is a little technique that can, you know, stimulate or help us increase our mobility through that colon or the large intestine. Mm-hmm. So I kind of mentioned that the colon goes in an upside down U, starting kind of at our right hip. It travels up to our right rib cage, across to the left, and then down. And then that's where it connects into the rectum, where we go to the bathroom. So what we want to do first, I like to talk about this like backing cars out of the garage, right? We want to start on that left side really lightly. You don't really want to press deeply into this, but lightly press down that left side all the way kind of until you reach that hip bone, and do this about 3 to 5 times, right?
Yeah.
So down that left side.
Rib cage down to
left rib cage to the left hip. Once you do that, then we're going to start kind of at the right rib cage and go across. This is the next section of the driveway that we got to clear out. go across from right rib cage to left rib cage, and then down again, and then down. And then the third portion is coming from right hip up to right rib cage 3 to 5 times, then right rib cage to left rib cage, and left rib cage down to left hip. You're making that whole U. And then a few times you can just go over the whole thing and repeat.
Mm-hmm.
And a really important thing to be doing while you do this is breathing.
Yes.
And relaxing, especially if you hit spots that are uncomfortable.
Yeah. And remember, tapping into those slow exhales is going to turn off that sympathetic. So it's going to turn off that flight, fright, freeze, that constriction that we feel within our body, especially when we have moments of pain. So just exhaling nice and slow every time you go across, it kind of helps you to remember, like, you're going gentle with this motion within the belly, and you're just allowing that body, again, kind of stimulate that vagus nerve, decrease that tension, decrease that inflammation, and help to get things moving and feeling better with decreased pain.
Absolutely. So we encourage you to explore some of these, explore your breath, especially if you have some abdominal symptoms or some abdominal pain come up. Just try and take some nice, slow, deep breaths into it. Maybe try some of that abdominal mobility or abdominal massage technique that we just
belly
went through. Belly massage. And just see how it makes you feel.
Yeah. And there's always different positions that you can go into. And maybe I'll link one of the videos that I've done on in the show notes, because I've done a great video in terms of showing not only this technique on Instagram, but also showing different positions that you can put your body in as well. So some of them that help to create almost like this elongation of the abdomen in a relaxed position. So it's kind of thinking of almost like tractioning the stomach, but without like force or without sucking in the stomach. So it helps to relax what's happening in there. Happy baby pose. So pulling the legs up into happy baby pose really helps. Cat stretch, or if you think of like down dog, that really helps to like open and relax the belly. Again, you want to think of a relaxation every time you're doing these. You could do twisting, so open book, where you're laying on a side and you're just kind of twisting open through the upper back or through the low back. And actually, one that is always going to be one of my go-tos and my favorites is going upside down. It sounds weird, but all of my friends that have stomach issues as well, we all know, like, when we go into a headstand or a handstand and just relax in the belly area. So even if you do it against the wall, if you can, okay, safely, then it actually helps to decrease pressure on what's going on. And again, it allows that elongation in that relaxed state. So you kind of get that belly to just start to relax. But start with the techniques that Dom gave in terms of how you do it. I even have him do it on my belly when I get really upset.
If there's someone you trust nearby,
yeah,
and you can have them do it, it just helps you relax into it that much more. Yeah. So, and it can be a little bit of a connecting thing. And I love the going upside down thing, because for me also, when you go upside down, you have to breathe well. It gives a different stimulus on your organs, because suddenly gravity's pulling them in the opposite direction. So you're honestly working with that breath and giving a little bit of a physical stimulus with gravity suddenly getting flipped upside down on it. So I really haven't tried that one myself, because I'm not as great as going upside. It's not the first thing I do is try to go upside down like Jen might. But
Yeah.
So are we ready to head into our interview?
Yeah, let's do it. Before we hop into the podcast, real quick, we do have a link in the show notes so that you guys can easily go check out Gem and get it. Honestly, ladies, I use Gem. I love Gem. Any women who come over to the place, I'm always like, do you want a Gem? Because you're a Gem. I just love it so much. So go to the show notes, check it out, and then listen to the podcast as she explains why it is so incredibly beneficial for your body. Up next, we have special guest Sarah Colin, who is the founder and CEO of what is called Gem, which is an antivitamin. And I'm excited for you guys to hear all about not only this product called Gem, but we also go into the facts and science of supplements, what to be looking out for, nutrition, nutritional labels. And if you head to the show notes right now and click the link for Gem, you can go check it out, and you can even go purchase it as you're listening to everything and all the facts in this episode coming up. I am so excited to hop into this next podcast. We have Sarah Colin on the podcast. She is the founder and creator of GEM, which I actually met GEM, the product, when I was, I was trying on clothes at like a warehouse, and they were like, oh, here's another product that we kind of use and we promote. So would you want to try it out? And I was like, this looks so cute. I would love to. And I remember having it and I loved it. And it's something that I've still continued to use in my everyday. And it's just this little multivitamin that I think people, I'm so excited for them to, one, Sarah, just get to know you and get to know the product a little bit better. But this isn't meant to be like a push to a product. It's meant to give education in nutrition and wellness. And so I'm so excited to hear your story and be able to bring this awareness of supplements, of nutrition to people. So with that, Sarah, do you mind just giving us a little background of who you are?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here. I am Sarah, the founder of GEM. I've been working on this for a few years now. My background has been in environmental science and health and wellness. Started out from a policy perspective. I got into the world of startups and building things and have been in the food and beverage space for some time. And really was inspired to build GEM through my own health journey and discovered that there really wasn't a great way for me to fill the gaps in my diet with unprocessed, clean, whole foods in a convenient format. And a lot of the supplements out there didn't work for my body, whether it's because I was allergic to them or they're just filled with a lot of artificial and synthetic things. And so that's what led me down the path of really building my own solution.
So I love how what the product that you built really came from your journey. And I tend to find that the best and most authentic products come from something like that. Can you talk a little more about within your journey, when you were looking for different supplementation or looking for different products like that, what were some of those things you were finding, like the fillers and, you know, the ingredients that were in there that you're like, we can't have this, we need to make something new?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I had kind of a different, it was in my mid-20s and was having adult acne. I had some weird inflammation and swelling. I was having metabolism issues. And so took a bunch of blood tests and allergy tests, and I found out that I was food sensitive or allergic to corn, soy, wheat, and peanuts. And these are four ingredients that are really that dominate our entire global food supply. They actually make up more than 70% of our daily calories, whether you realize it or not.
Wow.
It's even the food that they use for animals, right? It's like chicken food too, the corn, soy, and wheat. And it's also in a lot of your processed food bars, in your cereals, it's in your dressings, and it's even in your supplements. And so it's not that, you know, everything corn, soy, and wheat is a bad, you know, are bad things. They're also plants and good things too. But the way in which we're deriving vitamins from it and the way in which we're applying them to food products is leading just to a very reductionist view of our food system, in which we're kind of taking out all the beautiful whole food components, the cofactors, the co-nutrients, the bioactive compounds, the antioxidants, and we're stripping those away and then really overprocessing our foods. And we're doing that to our supplements as well. And so I realized through my own health experience that I, you know, was trying at one point in my life to get rid of these things from my diet. And by the way, if you try not to eat corn, soy, wheat, and peanuts, you pretty much eat nothing. So that wasn't fun. And also not realistic in long term, but I couldn't find any supplements that didn't have these things in it. And then the more that I started to peel back the layers, the more that I was like, wow, like it's kind of insane actually that we don't really question where our vitamins come from. And in this like tiny, you know, hot pink capsule that's supposed to be my multivitamin, not only is it derived from these things that I'm finding out that I'm allergic to, but it's filled with a lot of other fillers and binders and artificial colorants that I just wasn't aware of that don't really seem necessary, right? And there's a lot of like fatty acids and bioactive compounds and antioxidants that aren't there that I think should be part of your daily routine. And so that, you know, and there's some alarming stats that I like to give of things that I found, like 90% of vitamin D, for instance, comes from this fancy word called lanolin, which is really, lanolin is actually a oil derived from sheep's wool. So most of our vitamin D today comes from sheep's wool.
Wow.
And that was like, you know, that's what I mean by not really questioning where your vitamins come from. Not that, again, vitamin D is from sheep's wool is necessarily a bad thing, but our vitamin D comes from mushrooms and GEM. So this idea of coming from a whole food nutrient, and you're getting so much more, right? And you, it's a lot cleaner and a lot more real. And so that was, you know, just a few things that I started to learn and uncover and led me down the path of, you know, using ingredients that you might not see in your everyday, like superfood ingredients like spirulina or chlorella, and trying to integrate those along with your vitamin B's and D and omega into, you know, a convenient format that you can take every day into a real food format. And so, I mean, there's a lot of like, you know, the list could go on of just sort of like scary things in vitamins. But those were, I think, some of the alarming stats.
So you said one of my buzz phrases, which was whole foods. And I think it's just shocking that sheep's wool, really? Like, it's just amazing the things that we try drawing these nutrients out to put in supplements. So being somebody who throughout college and now even am a consumer of supplements, what are some of the things that people can be looking for to help point out some of these, what we call frauds? Like, are there any specific ingredients they could look for on labels? Or I also know a lot of supplements say like, this supplement is not, you know, third party tested by the FDA. So what can some people start to look for to know if, okay, this is something I should avoid, or this one's probably a good one?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there are, I think, you know, there's like this maybe, so there are some things like right away, you know, like artificial colorants, or a bunch of synthetic binders that you might or might not see on a label. And they're honestly, probably if I create a laundry list right now for all the listeners, they probably wouldn't remember a lot of it. So I think actually the easiest way to think about this is, and it's how we design GEM too, is that we actually have a nutritional fact panel, not a supplement panel. So we're created with a real food product. All of our ingredients, dates, you know, pumpkin seeds, chia seeds, these are all ingredients that are regulated by the FDA as a real food product. And so we are actually not a supplement label. We are a nutritional fact panel, which means we follow very different safety guidelines. We follow very different label and regulatory guidelines, in which everything you see on our label is transparent and true. We don't hide anything under quote unquote like proprietary blend or something like that. And not that, again, like all supplement companies hide things, but like when you go to a real food aisle and you see a nutritional fact panel, you then know that the ingredients listed and the order in which they listed is, you know, everything is there and nothing is hidden. And so you actually see, you know, where your vitamins come from and in what form. And so we have that listed on the label, and that's something to look for when you're looking at a label, whether it's a supplement, I mean, a nutritional fact panel. I mean, most supplements are supplement panels. So even those try to see if they go above and beyond in being very transparent on their label, even if they're not regulated to like I am, in which they actually list the form of their vitamin and where it comes from. So that I think is like one easy hack, because if you see that the form and where it comes from, then you know there's like a lot of transparency behind it. If you see things like proprietary blends and they don't tell you what's in the blend, I would be a little bit wary, because there are probably a lot of things hidden in that blend that you don't really want to know, or just are, you know, maltodextrin or these kinds of other corn-based processors and fillers that, again, like aren't so bad for you, but just are more of that processing stuff that really does, you know, no favors for your body. So that would be like the first kind of structural thing that I would look at when like determining, you know, what kind of supplement to take, is just kind of turn that label around and see if you can really see where the vitamins come from and if they're coming from the wholest food, real food ingredients possible, and nothing's being hidden.
I love that. I mean, that transparency, especially, that speaks to us on a huge level, because that's really what we look for when we're researching products and when we're seeing, you know, what foods do we even feel good having in the house or taking. And especially when it comes to supplements, there's so much known for most people. And so it is scary to say, oh, well, this person backs this supplement, so it sounds like it's good and I should probably be taking it. And so I love that you point out how to look for transparency and what you're really looking for in products. I think that is so beneficial and hugely helpful.
Yeah. And I think that's like the really tricky part, you know, because unlike beauty, right? Beauty, there's like this list of ingredients to kind of look for, but that's the hard thing or to watch out for. But that's actually the hardest thing in supplements is that sometimes they're hidden. So even if you're watching out for them, you can't see them. So you really have to get kind of savvy on understanding, you know, how labels are set up, looking for the forms and looking if they're laying out their label in a way that is really transparent. And the one other thing that I would just add is that, you know, when I was designing this idea of a, you know, we're really the anti-vitamin. We're almost not a vitamin at all because we're a real food product, but we're designed to really replace this idea of a multivitamin. And we're not only redesigning, you know, what it looks like instead of a pill or capsule, it's a real piece of food, but also like what goes inside of it. And so, you know, often just finding a supplement with 1,000% or the most percentages or the highest percentages, excuse me, or the most supplement or the most nutrients in there doesn't actually mean that that's the best. More is not always more in this case. Less is more. And so actually looking to see if they include, you know, other superfood ingredients or adaptogens, like we have ashwagandha, which is proven to help, you know, reduce your cortisol levels if taken daily in a functional dose that we have it. We have things like spirulina, which is one of the most nutrient-dense plants and incredibly ecologically efficient as well. So there's just a lot of other nutrients it's providing apart from kind of your vitamin B's. And so like looking for supplements that kind of bring in, you know, these other types of superfoods, I think is a good, you know, that means that they're probably following a good philosophy of like trying to actually diversify your diet. And then again, you know, not looking for just 1,000 or 100% of your RDAs, but recognizing that less is actually more sometimes and megadosing can be harmful. So those are just my other two educational things to note.
So how do we know though, then how much that we should be taking of it, each thing? And if we do take just one gem, because I do like, I want to emphasize the fact that it does look like a food. It looks like a snack. And when I first got it, I was giving it to everyone like, oh, do you want a gem? Do you want a gem? Because it's such an easy way to be able to like just pick it up. It looks like a little cube and you eat it. It does look like a little tiny bar or a little snack. And it's surprisingly very good too. And because it looks a little green and it has spirulina, you know, I think it initially the shock of it kind of scares people knowing what ingredients are in it. But you guys have made it super tasty without adding sugar, which is crazy too. So I want to talk about that. But first, I do want to know, you know, just more about how do we know how much of each superfood we should be having? And how do we know when we're adding too much? Because I've known people who are like, oh, well, this is supposed to be a super healthy superfood. So I'm going to have it with my oatmeal, my coffee, and my smoothie, and my, you know, and it just kind of continues all day long.
Totally. Well, that's why we designed it. We don't have megadoses of everything. So we actually went and said, okay, what are the sort of average deficiencies in for American adult women that they're likely not getting every day? So things like vitamin D and magnesium. And then we said, okay, what are some of the key kind of modern lifestyle demands or issues that plague us most, right? So a lot of us, you know, we're eating more plant-based now. We're maybe consuming more alcoholic drinks. We're under a lot of stress, both work professionally, but also the environment and pollution. And so we have a lot of stress and fatigue and skin issues and inflammation. And so, you know, how can we kind of tackle some of those issues and also sort of address some of our key deficiencies? So that's why we have things like ashwagandha, for instance, which helps, you know, balance your stress levels and help manage your stress. That's how you have, things like spirulina and chlorella. Like chlorella is really great for kind of, you know, there's a lot of research around its detoxification abilities. And I don't always love to use the word detox. I think there's a lot of different meanings of it, yeah. But it can help actually detox heavy metals out of your body and things of that source and kind of get the blood flow moving and bringing oxygen in. And so It is a really helpful tool when we're maybe in harsher environments as well. Same with this red algae, astaxanthin. So astaxanthin, I know it's a big word, but it's just a simple red algae, actually, that's very natural. And it's a whole red algae. It's actually the most potent antioxidant on earth. So it's like 550 times more powerful than vitamin C. It's like 150 times more powerful than vitamin E. And so it is, it just does wonders for obviously your brain. It actually can pass through your blood-brain barrier, like more so than other antioxidants. So it's just a lot more powerful in that sense for overall like skin health as well. And again, just like help battling these like everyday stressors that we're encountering in our modern day environment. So that's how we thought about designing GEM in terms of like answering your original question of like, okay, so what exactly, you know, how do we know what percentage to get? I mean, we design GEM based off of like, if you're having a healthy, well-rounded diet, you're getting a lot of things like vitamin C already. Actually, a lot of us aren't deficient in it. We get it from our foods. So you do get a lot of nutrients from a well-rounded, you know, healthy diet. The question is like, what are you probably not getting from our food supply? And that's why I mentioned like vitamin D and magnesium often. Mm-hmm. And then what are some issues that are happening like stress or drinking or maybe not eating or maybe eating more plant-based that would actually deplete some vitamins like vitamin Ds that you might need to replenish with. And you don't need to replenish a whole lot, but maybe, you know, a third of your RDA to kind of gap you up. And so that's kind of how we design GEM and how we think about filling the gaps in your diet.
That's so amazing how you just approach this in a way to really supplement, but then also do things that are going to help optimize what people do in their general diet anyway. You know, reducing stress, kind of lowering some of those other things in the body is just going to help them utilize the nutrients they're taking in otherwise, which is really incredible. And this is where I kind of want to turn to a term I saw used on your website, bioavailability, and how the bioavailability of GEM is so much better than, you know, like you were mentioning some of these other types of supplements, and the absorption rate of the, you know, the vitamins and nutrients that are in GEM. So can you explain a little bit what bioavailability means and why that's so important in playing into, I guess, a lot of the things we've already talked about?
Yeah, no, I love that question. And it is a really tough one because I think bioavailability is kind of thrown around by a lot of companies, and there's a lot of like graphs you'll see, and I think people kind of use it sometimes in the wrong ways, I will say. So bioavailability to us, we just talk about like real food form, right? Your body, like common sense science, like your body is designed to consume real food and get nutrients from it. That's the beauty of how your body works and how we're designed as humans. And so anything in a real food form is likely going to work better for your body. And so we like to talk about bioavailability in the healthiest form possible, which is real food form for us. So the more that we can get, you know, vitamins that are actually naturally fermented or coming from real food with their cofactors and co-nutrients and bioactive compounds, then the more that it will do for your body and the more bioavailable it will be. And that's what I mean by bioavailable, the more it will do. And so one study I usually like to cite is like there's some research around this, but there's one study where it kind of looks at a vitamin C tablet and a tomato, and people take the, you know, and they showed sort of studies between someone just taking the vitamin C tablet and someone taking the tomato, and the tomato did a lot more good for their body than the vitamin C tablet, but both had the same amount of vitamin C. So why is that? Because tomato has lycopene, right? Which is a compound that you might not look for in your vitamin. It's not on that macro vitamin and mineral list, but is actually a really important nutrient to really help make vitamin C super effective and do a lot more for your body maybe than it would otherwise. So those are the types of things that, you know, like vitamin D and K2 work super well together. We have, a functional dose of K2 from chickpeas in our product. We have 52 micrograms. And that's really important because a lot of people think that they're deficient, for instance, in calcium, but actually they get enough calcium in their everyday diet if they eat a well-rounded diet. We have a lot of calcium fortification in our foods. It's that often you don't have the ability to absorb calcium because you're deficient in K2. So that's where, you know, having K2 is important and why we have it in GEM. And it's also a cofactor for a lot of other things like vitamin 2. So all of these things are things that help with quote unquote bioavailability. But in my definition, the bioavailability is just trying to do as much as good as it can really for your body and mind in the best form possible.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I remember even just looking at an ingredient list, I usually, anytime I get a supplement sent to me or anything, I usually take a picture of it and send it to my RD friends, my naturopathic friends, you know, stuff like that, just to find out, you know, well, what do you think? They say that it has all this ingredients in it, but is it actually doing what it said it would do? And one of my friends, I remember one time, there was like a laundry list of all these different vitamins it says that this product had in it. Had available in it. And my friend, one of our naturopathic friends, he was like, oh, you could walk past an orange and get more vitamin C than you would in this product. And so it's just, that's why I think understanding this and how products actually absorb and get worked into our body so that we're actually getting the nutrients that this product is saying we're getting is so highly important for people to start to understand and question, you know, question products, question food, question supplements, because if we're going to be buying them, we want to make sure that we're actually getting the benefit out of them. And I think that's so important.
I totally agree. I could not agree more. And I think, you know, that's why I try to keep it really simple, that it's just real food ingredients in the best form possible. And here's the nutrients that you're getting. It's designed to fill the gaps in your diet. And I try not to get so bogged down, I think, with some of the scientific terms of exact form or, you know, the things like if we start getting too specific, I think, or it's just too much information for people who are not engrossed in this world, maybe like you and me, mm-hmm. to really like take in. And it's very overwhelming. And I think, you know, it can get very confusing. And so I think the simpler we can make it as well is really important to make sure that these things are accessible to everyone.
Totally agree. Now, one question I have to ask, because it is called GEM and the packaging, everything, it's absolutely adorable and I love it. I'm like, see, because I'm a GEM. But so I think you marketed it perfectly, right? It's for women. But why? Why make a product and a supplement that's more geared toward women? And what do you think was missing specifically for women?
Yeah, oh, I love that question. You know, I'm just really passionate about women are, on average, more stressed out than men. Women on average, and there's a lot of like global stats around nutrient deficiencies, really being something that's more common among women and way more impactful and harmful, and has really hurt women way more than men across our world. And you see this a lot in the developing world, particularly when it comes to malnutrition and the way that it's sort of fueling our gender inequality. And so I think from, you know, just a personal mission standpoint, it was important for me when I'm thinking about this to kind of focus on how can we raise women up. And I think a lot of, you know, addressing that gender inequality does come from a nutritional standpoint. So philosophically, I do believe that, I guess. So there's a little bit of just a general mission on my part there. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, like when thinking about women and how we design, you know, how we design GEM for it, the reality is that a lot of key deficiencies in women are common in men too. Right? Like men also are deficient in a lot of these things. We didn't design this as like a prenatal, for instance. So it's not like we're putting a lot more folate or something else in it that would. So it's actually a product that men use too. That's great for men. And we do have a lot of male customers. If anything, you know, I haven't done the complete research on the men's side, obviously, but I do know that there are some things that might be okay for men to take more often than women, like zinc for testosterone, whereas women, it can be good to take as well, but maybe not every day. It can cause some imbalances if it's megadosed. And so with women, the reason why you have to kind of think of these things differently is that we have a totally different like hormonal rhythm, right? And this is actually where I get like pretty passionate, because There is a lot to address in a woman's body around nutrition that relates to her hormones and how we balance our hormones. And that's where like things like ashwagandha is really important in hormonal balancing. Mm-hmm. And it's true for men, but not as, you know, extreme for women. And so, you know, a lot of these diets and fads like keto, for instance, can be really harmful for women because not having any sugar at all can actually, some women will lose their periods, for instance. But the problem is that a lot of these diets and things are tested on men. And even our RDAs, by the way, our daily value recommendations that are on our labels were formed by a group of men. There's this whole sexist history that we don't have to get into now. But and so that's really dangerous when a lot of these like diets and these trends are like built sort of through male testing, is because then we shouldn't really just be applying them to a woman's body, because we do have totally different hormonal structures that need to be taken into account. And so, you know, I think with this first product, like I said, it's actually pretty great for men and women. But as we expand forward, we certainly want to be designing more and more for how we can help, I think, address this gap and really and help women with their nutrition from that lens as well.
That's absolutely amazing. And coming back to kind of the first thing you said, everything that you're doing with this product is from an internal passion and also your individual need that you initially had. I know that Jen and I both, a lot of the information that we put out is so that we can help provide access to the things that people need and to help bridge some of these inequalities within our individual bodies or discrepancies within our individual bodies, and as well as the inequalities, gender, minority, or wherever that we're seeing in this world, and how we can start to bridge those and bring access to that. So I know that she and I immensely appreciate the work that you're doing, the research you're putting behind it, and how you're getting it out to people. So for the people listening, where can they find out more about GEM, more about the work that you guys are doing? Where do you have all your information?
Certainly. We are all online. So dailygem.co, dailygem.co. And there you can sign up for a monthly subscription of GEM. We also have trial packs available. Comes in three flavors, peppermint, lemon, and cacao. We ship to your door every month. We also have our own texting system. So you can actually text to manage your subscription or swap flavors or cancel anytime. We make it very easy and very convenient and very accessible. So that's the kind of joy of being online. We actually are also in Erewhon, if you're locally here in Los Angeles. But for the most part, all of our information as well, the education that we do, our content is all on our website, on our blog, and also on Instagram. So we do, we're pretty educational there a lot with our posts and our stories. So you can learn a lot about how we're thinking about nutrition and some of the science that we're learning and sharing at daily_gem on Instagram. And yeah, I think those are the two big places.
Yay. Amazing. Well, I know I'm going to continue to take my daily gem and I hope people will really look into it and check it out. Peppermint is definitely my favorite. I think I've
Everyone has their favorites. I don't choose favorites. They're all my babies, but peppermint's definitely one of our...
Well, you're the mom, so you can't choose favorites.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Sarah, for dropping so much knowledge on just, you know, facts about supplements and nutrition and how people can really start supporting their bodies. It's everything that we really want to bring people the information about to optimize their bodies. So thank you for being a part of it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really lovely being able to share today.
Thank you so much for listening to us on the Optimal Body Podcast, where we're going to continue to bring you the PT pearls and guests that will help you find your optimal body. Now, head over to wherever you listen to this and leave us an honest review, and head to docgenfit.com/podcast, where you can find all the show notes.
Don't forget that we're going to give away a free month to someone who subscribes, leaves us an awesome review, and lets us know what they want to review on the next PT Pearl. So we'll be choosing that once a week to get into a free month of the Optimal Body membership.